Hello and welcome to Jaw Law. I'm your host, Joe McGregor, from the law firm of McGregor and Oblad from the beautiful city of Dallas, Texas. Today, we are going to be asking ourselves, why do I want to buy this practice? All right, so today, the prompting for this episode is really just these random questions that we ask clients, and not every client. Sometimes, as you'll see, sometimes the clients walk in the door, they already have these things answered. But generally speaking, what happens is that somewhere throughout the process, we're talking to a client and we say, just, you know, hold up one second. Why this? Why that? And the first question, it's going to sound like the most obvious thing, but number one, why is the seller selling? Whenever we ask this, every single client has an answer. And it's often for the legit reasons. This person's super old, so he needs to retire. This person is moving to a different country, moving to a different place. But sometimes the spouse has a job transfer. There are a ton, and these are not the exclusive list of legitimate answers. It's just that sometimes the answers are pretty obvious. It just makes sense. When we ask this question, a lot of times it's not like we know that the broker or the seller has given an answer. This is why I'm selling. What we mean is, for reals, why are they selling? When we hear things like the seller just wants to slow down, or the seller has already made enough money, or the seller wants to step back from practicing dentistry, whatever, these are things that can be legitimate. There are people out there who are burned out. Maybe the practice didn't turn out exactly the way they wanted to. Maybe it's not making as much money as they wanted to. Maybe staff issues are way more than they ever thought would be, and they don't want to deal with them anymore. These are things that definitely happen, but they are also, I hesitate to call them excuses, but they're also cover stories. And what I mean by that is a seller may have like not a great reason, or something they perceive might not be taken well. And importantly, it's usually something that if they were being transparent and honest, they couldn't get as much for the practice. The practice would downgrade. So they need to come up with a cover story or a better explanation as to why they are selling. And you need to know the real reason why. You need to dig deep. You need to ask questions. You need to truly understand why they are selling. Because presumably, if this is a money-making practice, why would they walk away? And, all these answers of, oh, well, I've made enough money, or I'm tired of dealing with this. Well, get an associate. Keep having this asset pump money for you. So if they're not willing to do those things, or they've decided that they don't want to do those things, you need to know why. Now, I'm not saying those are wrong. It could be that they have decided they're not the type that are great at managing associates. They could be just like, I don't know what it takes to take this practice to the next level. These are all fine examples. So everything that I've listed out, none of these are wrong. We have clients where these are the reasons they're selling. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying, do you know the truth? Do you know why they're really are selling? So again, just to beat this dead horse, it's not the answer that is important. It's whether or not this is the right answer, the true answer. And I think to piggyback off of that, it's about timing. Why now? Why didn't you sell this last year? Or why aren't you selling this next year? Why now? Why you? Why did the seller pick you? Is it because you're the only person that's interested in this practice? Sometimes we get excited. We're like, oh, thank goodness there's not going to be a bidding war. I'm the only person. Well, you kind of need to ask, why am I the only person pursuing this practice? And again, there are perfectly fine, legitimate reasons why that may be the case, but it's a question you should ask yourself, and you need to come up with a truthful, honest answer, honest with yourself. And just to put a bow on this, just remember that brokers are professional salespeople. Most, but not all, probably know the real reason the seller is selling, and they have decided already whether or not that's a good sounding reason. And they are going to put the best foot forward. And I'm not even really blaming them, because that's kind of their job. We would, of course, prefer that brokers are being super extra transparent, but they are salespeople, and their job is to get this thing sold for the highest price possible. Some of this, in fact, probably all of it, needs to come from you, you or your team. You need to be asking the right questions. Why is the seller selling? Selling now, selling to me. All right, the next question you need to ask yourself is, what makes this practice tick? For better or worse, what makes the practice tick? And I mean, if it's a good and successful practice, what makes it a good and successful practice? And if it's a failing practice, why has it failed? And truthfully, every practice has things they are doing well and things they are not doing well. So this is a question, no matter what, you need to be asking yourself. What are the pros? What are the cons? The challenge here is to not accept the stock answers. Don't believe what you are being told. These are things you need to figure out for yourself. And I mean this from two angles. Number one, if you are being told, hey, you could make more money if you add a day of the week. Well, it doesn't quite work like that. And why didn't the seller do that? Or one of my other favorites, hey, I did all this without marketing. Why? Like, why did it never occur to do marketing? Is it the case that marketing won't work? Did they try marketing? It failed? Again, plenty of practices are built on word of mouth. But just because someone tells you, oh, you could double this if you just did some marketing. You could double this if you just add another extra chair or another day or whatever. You need to set aside these potentials, things that people are telling you, and you need to know, why are the things the way they are? And the other dimension here is, you can't really trust what you are being told, because sometimes either you're being sold by like a broker or even the seller, or you are being told by someone who doesn't fully understand it themselves. There are tons of sellers who don't understand fully why their practice is successful or not successful, or what's more common, they only have an incomplete picture of why they're successful or why they are not successful. If you truly want to take over this practice and make it successful for you, however you define it, you need to know exactly what is making this practice successful. What are the things holding it back? If it's a failing practice, what are the things that are failing it? And do you truly know how to fix those things? All right, question number three. How will the staff react to me? And the follow-up to that, how will I react to their reaction? This is arguably the most difficult question, because you probably cannot fully know. Now, this is for people who have never met the staff, and unfortunately, it is the case that in most practice acquisition processes, especially the brokered ones, there is an effort to limit your access to the staff. And even if you meet the staff, it's not like you're taking them camping and you're hearing their deepest, darkest secrets around the campfire or therapy bench or whatever. You might meet them and maybe learn their names, But the reality is that you probably will not get to know them very well. Most likely will not even get to meet them until the practice becomes yours. And I think that what makes this difficult is, when you're being honest with yourself, are you the type of person, do you have the leadership skills to respond to people you've never met who have complaints that you had nothing to do with, that have habits and territory that, you're the newcomer? Are you going to be able to take control of the situation in a way that keeps the practice going? Now, we've kind of talked about this in pieces in past episodes, but one of the things that comes up is we look at longevity as a pro. It is, but it also has times where it's not a positive. Are you aware of how you will interact and respond to people who have been there longer than you've been alive? When you're being honest with yourself, are you easy to get along with? Are you anal retentive? Are you just whatever? There's not like a good person and a bad person. It's, do you have the flexibility and the leadership skills to enter into this situation? It's one of the reasons we like it when people are buying practices that they are familiar with. Anyway, like I said, this is probably the most difficult question because it just forces you to be amazingly honest and self-aware, and that's difficult for all of us. The next question is kind of the same thing, but how will the patients react? Now, this is a little sensitive. I swear this is one of the most important ones, and it also requires some honesty, and I will be honest with you, it's kind of tough to talk about. But let us start at the idea that somehow that seller that you're buying from, they convinced those patients to go to that practice and stay there. Do you know how that happens? Do you know why they come to this person? Presumably, except in a few small towns, presumably a patient has options. Why did they choose that option? Then you collect those. Why are these people? What are the commonalities in this person that all these people see, they appreciate? I think step one of this question is finding out that answer. Why are these patients coming here? Obviously, it's going to be different for different patients. I'm saying, generally speaking, what is it about the practice and what is it about the seller that keeps patients coming back? Now, I will tell you that anytime that there is a transition, there will be patient attrition. Not every single patient is going to stay. The question, though, is what are you going to do to make up for that? We can also assume that these patients know other dentists. What are you going to do to keep these patients from going to those other dentists that they may know and stick with you? And are there things about that dentist who's selling the practice that are common in you that will connect the two of you together to keep those patients there? The answer to this is so varied, right? It's the staff, it's the location, it's the ambiance, it's the marketing, it's the pricing, it's the insurances you take, whatever. But at the end of the day, this is a people business. So it is also, how did that seller interact with that patient when that patient is sitting in that chair? Do you have enough commonality? And the reason I say this is difficult is because sometimes we see a seller who looks and acts and thinks very different than the buyer. We've talked about this before. It's a very delicate subject. Now, there are tons of really successful practice transitions where the seller and the buyer had nothing on the surface alike, but it turned out to be amazing. Happens all the time. But there are still commonalities. There are things that connect those people so that when that patient sits down, They recognize it. That person may look different. They may be a different color. They may be a different gender, even from a different country. But there's something about that buyer that's similar to what they saw in the seller, and it keeps the patient there. Are you honest enough with yourself? And do you have the skill to ascertain what it is about that seller that the patients see and appreciate to know that you have that in you? Or if it's not about the seller, it's about the location. Are you just telling yourself that it's the location? Or are you just telling yourself that it's the staff or whatever? It just requires a lot of awareness and a lot of honesty and I guess a lot of hope. All right, the final question that you need to ask yourself when buying a practice is, if I do not buy this practice right now, who will? And if I don't buy this practice right now, not just who will, but on what terms? This is what informs your negotiating leverage. So let's just make up a practice. There's a practice being sold for $1 million. And you walk up to the door and you say, I want to pay for your practice about $100,000 less because I think your practice is actually worth $900,000, not $1 million. Now, you have every right to believe that the practice is worth $900,000. You do not have to agree. But we ask ourselves this question because the seller may say, hey, that's cool. You don't have to pay $1 million. We'll see you later. Because that person right behind you will pay $1 million. In fact, if they won't, there's like 8 other people that are willing to pay $1 million. And I bet some of them might pay 1.1. And that helps you know where your leverage is at. So if you truly do want the practice, it might actually be worth $1 million, at least to you, because it is that $1 million, at least to other people. And of course, we've talked about pricing and how it's more of an art than a science. But the point is, are you fully aware of what other people see in this practice? It kind of works the other way too, right? Because if you're willing to pay $1 million, but no one else will go above 900,000, then you need to ask yourself, why am I paying $1 million? But the real usefulness of this question is as you're walking through the terms of the deal. If someone comes to you and says, I will only sell my practice, but you have to close this month. Well, if no one else in this world could possibly close this month, you don't actually have to close this month. If someone says, I will only sell you my practice if you buy the AR, and you don't want to buy the AR, well, that's fine. If no one else will buy the AR, then stand your ground. But if everyone else will buy the AR, well, you might need to think about that. Do you really want the practice? And this isn't to say you need to stay at the table and offer what you think other people might offer. It's just to inform your leverage. Do you think that you can stand your ground, or do you think you might need to give in on that issue? But that's how you weigh where you stand in terms of reasonability. And it's also how you were honest with yourself. If you're the only person buying this practice and you're the only person willing to give these terms, do you know why that's the case? Why you're the only one? And this goes back to really, and I guess this becomes circular, but goes back to that first question. Why are they selling to you? Well, it's because I'm the only person willing to pay this much. Why am I the only person willing to pay this much? Either way, it's a negotiating tool. You need to be asking yourself this, probably on more than one issue. Now, this podcast was labeled 5 questions you need to ask yourself when buying a practice. But I have a bonus one, the 6th question that I don't know that you need to necessarily be asking yourself. I think it's helpful. And what it is I think you need to ask yourself, where do I think I will be in 10 years? The reason this can be useful is, first of all, it helps us kind of weigh what's important in this deal and what's not. Let's say that you think this practice is worth $960,000 and they think it's worth $1 million. In 10 years, if things go where you think they're going to go, will you remember that $40,000? If you will, and if that $40,000 makes it more difficult for you to pay back this loan, then by all means, stick to your guns. But if in 10 years you think this is going to be a $3 million practice because you've got this amazing plan, Well, that might be something you can give in on, or at least give in on that and capture somewhere else. And I guess that kind of leads me to the other aspect of this. Do you have a long-term plan? Do you know where you're going? And do you know today, before this practice ever becomes yours, do you know how the practice today, how it honestly is, not how you think it can be, but how it is today? Do you have a plan to get it from there to where you want it to be, to take it from point A to point B? And ultimately, that's what this episode is about. Are you truly understanding what point A actually is? Because if you think you're on point A, I'm really butchering this, but if you think you are on point A, but you're really on, well, I don't even know where to go from here. If you're not even to point A, then your ability to go from point A to B is jeopardized. So please ask yourself these five questions, maybe these six questions, so that when you are going into this practice, you understand why they're selling it to you. You understand what you're going to do the moment you get in there. You understand the staff. You understand the patient base. And you understand where you want to take this thing and what you're going to need to do to get there. And you do those things, and I promise the acquisition, even with all the hiccups and bumps that are going to happen no matter what, your acquisition will go so much better. That's all we got today. Thank you so much, and we will see you next time. We'll